Why did I choose Amazon? Well, I was asked to do this in September. And it wasn't in an Advent spirit, Jen. I was more in an Amazon spirit. Amazon represents the culture from which we come and to which we go. And it offers fullness and invitations to immediate possession. What I've been praying with this, what I'm aware of is what Amazon can't deliver for Christmas. That's what we're doing. I play with words and things. If you change one letter in Amazon and add a letter at the end, you get amazing. So that's kind of the highlight of the morning for you. You have been meeting people maybe you haven't seen in a while. And one of the ways to greet people is, what's new? What's new with you? Tell me something new. And what I realize we're going to pray with today is not attractive. You're not going to like it. Though it is absolutely central to our human experience, that is, what we're going to pray with is absolutely appropriate to what it is to be humans. But I'll come to that. Just a little about Advent. It's in a northern hemisphere experience. Things are darker, deader, colder. There's nothing on the tree limbs except snow and frost. The leaves and fruit have fallen. So it's longing. That's what it's every around us is longing for what we had and what we hope. And the liturgy of Advent will speak of that, of promise. Amazon makes promises. Amazon, and I'm just using that as a metaphor for the commercial side of things. Amazon offers the promise will be fulfilled, guaranteed. They guarantee delivery, and you hardly have to wait. What I'm going to be praying with, what I've been praying with, is, maybe it's this way. Whatever is good, we will want more of it. Two cookies are always better than one. And the experience of something good is the invitation to desire and openness. What the culture and Amazon would say is, you deserve to have your desires completely fulfilled and guaranteed. At least what will be guaranteed is that it will arrive. How it fulfills you is the illusion. it's going to fulfill you for a while. Another way of looking at it is, if I tell you a joke and you will laugh, now say, let me tell it to you again. And a third time, you say, no, we want something new. Do you have another one? You are entertaining, so can you entertain us some more? Well, what was wrong with the first experience of being entertained and tickled? Well, that's temporary. And within it is the invitation to more, please. I have a little long old time thing, but just for fun, class participation. So just pick a number between 1 and 20. Don't tell me. Just be quiet. 1 and 20. Hold on to it. Now, double it. I know it's early, but double it. Then add 6 to that. Then divide it by 2. That means in half. And then the number you began with, subtract it from the number you had there. And what's your answer?
3.
Excellent. Anybody get another number? Well, now that's very entertaining. But I'm sure somebody can figure it out that what you're doing is something I can't understand. But you really end up with 6 and divide it, and that gets 3. Anyway, now, you could tell that to nieces and grandchildren and all that, and it's fun, and they'll never be able to figure it out. And they'll say, oh, you're amazing. They'll say, well, let's do it with another. An odd number, 17, let's do 17. Well, once you figure it out, it's not as much fun. Okay, this is the part you're not going to like about Advent. Because we get accustomed to a more immediate understanding, holding, grabbing, we can have it. Some words, then. What is the difference between getting and receiving, for instance? What's the difference between having and holding? Here's the hard part, then. And you're going to hear this one way or another in all presentations. Maybe it's this simple, you can't have it all. Nothing can be everything. And yet, what we are given is longing in everything. I can only have one cookie. There's only one cookie left, so I have that. It's always, in a way, there's a disappointment in everything. And that everything, and this is, I'm playing with words here, but it's good. It's, then everything has an appointment. Everyone, everything, every experience has an appointment to let a thing or a person or a group or whatever, the appointment is, let it be what it is and what it isn't. And to reverence that within it, the disappointment is actually an invitation to something that, again, will not fulfill me. That's the hard part. And I'll say that one way or another, but it's there. It's everything, everyone, in one way, smiles at us and says, don't be fooled by me. I'm only appointed to be an invitation to the beyond. That's my appointment. And if you ask me to be the beyond, it will be a disappointment. Is that making sense? I hope so. that I am appointed today to disappoint you because I can't do your work for you. I can't explain, you know, all of reality. I can't explain, you know, the Trinity or human love or all these things. Everything is an invitation to pray with the disappointment and the appointment that everything is or everyone is, to pray with that they are appointed to smile at you and say, I'm not God. And Amazon cannot deliver God. But they can deliver things that will be appointed to disappoint you in a graceful sense, to let it be what it is and what it can't be. So that the trees that are, Shakespeare said, bare ruined choir lofts, they're empty of birds and leaves and things. But that's a promise. But even that which they promise will be appointed to say, look beyond, reach beyond, keep reaching, keep holding and receiving, not getting. So when we were kids, what did you get for Christmas? Getting means it's mine. Everything is meant in a way to tell me that I long for more. And in Advent, in the Catholic liturgies and readings, it's all about promise. But it's promise that won't be complete. We are complete with the sensitivity and the grace to say that the completion is incomplete. But it's what I can hold. And if I hold it reverently, it is also in preparation for distribution. We'll talk about that a little bit. So what to pray with? Well, what is the basic symbol of Advent? We're going to stay away from Christmas a little bit. But to pray with Advent is in the big symbol, and there's a goodness in it, is the Advent wreath, or say in church, in the Catholic Church, we have a wreath that has very wonderful symbolism in it, because in the northern hemisphere, everything has agriculturally has died. I mean, the Christmas experience, of course, historically, is that it was the Christmas was a celebration after the winter solstice in the north, the festival of Sol Invictus, the unconquered sun. You mean the sun is not going to die? It seems to be dying. It kept dipping towards the southern horizon. Maybe we won't have any growing things. Maybe it's just going to die. And the people in the Middle East and southern Italy, southern Europe, celebrated that there is, something's coming. It's going to get warmer and things are going to grow. So the Advent wreath is green, because it's a promise of something growing. And there are candles because it's dark. And each week in the Catholic Church, a candle is lit because it's getting brighter. The promise is getting closer. The promise is coming. But at the center of the Advent wreath is the great symbol of emptiness, of not having. The wreath can be round or square or trapezoid or whatever, but it's there's a middle to it that's incomplete. It's where we are. It's what we pray with. One thing about prayer. I listen to a lot of people about their prayer. I listen to my own prayer. A couple things. You will always evaluate something to the degree to which it fulfilled you. It was a good talk. I love to listen to adverbs. How was it? It was pretty good. How was it? It was fairly okay. It was kind of. We have our kids, I suppose, all kids, but at Creighton, he's like a nice guy. So that's too bad. Wouldn't it be better if he were a nice guy? Well, he's a nice guy, but you said he was like a nice guy. Well, adverbs diminish. But adverbs do say it could have been better. It always could be better. So, what I'm encouraging you is don't ever, ever, ever evaluate your prayer. Which is really difficult to do because you're evaluating all the time. Yourself and others and programs and everything. You're good at it. To evaluate your prayer is to say, what did I get? And what is mine? And how much of my goodness did I experience? Second thing, what is good about prayer is later. The fruitfulness of prayer is not during prayer. You know. And prayer doesn't have to go through the security check of the hard drive, your head, your intellect. You don't have to say, "Oh, that was, I got a good insight, so that was a good prayer." No, it was just a good insight. when people met the prophets and met Jesus, and especially Jesus, the encounter was the beginning of extending the encounter into a person's life. That prayer is not to be evaluated as good during the time of prayer. Forget it. You're always only going to be negative about it. Because you would like it to be more, of course. Two are better than one. So that the prayer, any prayer, is meant for prayerfulness later, that you won't even know about. You won't say, "Well, this is because I prayed." No, third thing. Every morning when I finish prayer, I say, I ask, could I have a day, a whole day, that is exactly that I have the same spirit and openness and grateful for the incomplete. Can I live that, please, the rest of the day? Can my prayer be more experienced later than now? That the prayer is a promise that to be experienced later. So I don't know if that's going to help, but people get so discouraged about prayer because they evaluate the grace out of it. Because they don't see what was given, they see what was not fulfilled. And we are, here's the hard, this is what you're not going to like. I'm going to say it all day, so. We are authentically and appropriately human to the degree to which we experience longing. not having. Everything we have is a promise for more. And we keep reaching. Yes, but the hand that is extended to grasp, the conflict is that it's also the hand that is open to receive. And receiving is not as fulfilling as grasping and getting. Another way to look at it, thinking about things, is that what I have learned is that it takes humility to be surprised. Surprised by myself, by others, by life. Because humility wars against arrogance. And arrogance is experienced by control. There'll be no surprises here. I want to know what's going on and when and who and what it's going to mean to me and will I look good, because I'm controlling reality so that I can have the appearance and the illusion of confidence or satisfaction. Satis, enough. That I can do enough to be fulfilled. No, you can do enough to experience that you haven't done enough. So that we say, satisfaction is a satisfaction. It's just an illusion. It doesn't last. There's a tomorrow. There's a later. So that what is asked of us in Lent and what we're going to do here, Advent, is experience that, and I'm deliberately not saying enough. I'm deliberately not going to do your work for you, because I can't force you to be grateful for longing. It's almost counterintuitive. We long for everything, and it's a wonderful thing with which to pray. What do you know in yourself has disappointed you? Who has disappointed you? And can I be grateful for what disappoints me? Why not? Why can't I be grateful for that which tells me there is a something more? That the emptiness of the Advent wreath is an invitation to authenticity. But I long to know, I long to have, I long to be. That's so appropriate, absolutely so appropriate to us. And yet, Amazon and the culture says you should have it all. No, that's going to be a terrible disappointment when it happens. You've heard me tell the story. I remember going into the Woolworths store, and there were boxes of roller skates that on the front of the box, on the lid, was a very happy young boy and girl roller skating. And a big sign, $2.79. So I saved my money and I bought the roller skates. And I went out, there was a step down to the sidewalk. And I sat on the step and I put the roller skates on. And I looked around for the little boy and little girl. They weren't there. And I started roller skating and one came off and I fell down. Those little kids, they never fell down. My first experience of commercial disappointment that I remember. The Psalms, there are many Psalms about longing, as a deer longs for running water, more thirsty than the desert am I. That's not desperate. Longing, hoping, reaching is very healthy for us to know. But to let go of the anger at disappointment, the frustration, those are, for us, those are either fleeing places or kneeling places. And you can flee from them and have more and more of something, hoping that the emptiness will be fulfilled. Well, fill it up. And that you can't figure out how you got to the answer three. It's not important. It's just fun. But we are built to know. You know, we long to know. Well, this is funny to say, but having answers is boring. Having is boring. If you find contentment without the invitation to the more, it's going to be boring. To say, this person, this place, this book, this employment, this is everything. No, you're heading for addiction. You will necessarily avoid your experience of the empty, because you think the empty, the circle surrounding the holy empty, you think that's bad, that's unhuman. No, that's where God is most likely to bless us. So when I pray every morning. I don't know if I love to pray or I love the tea that goes with me when I pray. But I'm there, and I say, God, please, no ideas. Please, no ideas, because I'll be tempted to write about them or give a talk about them or something. Can I just sit down and shut up and let the empty be a blessing? Or do I have to entertain myself and say, God, you are entertaining me, but I'm really just entertaining myself with my latest idea about something. Okay, so now what I'm going to do, I've never done this, but you are going to be an experimental group for me. So this is new. You're going to do something new. And you might not like it. I'm going to ask you at your tables to, as we say, break silence. I'm going to break silence. And I would hope that you could share with each other for about 5 minutes, so everybody gets a turn. What did you hear? What did you personally hear about which you were going to pray? And it might help, because maybe you weren't paying attention. I can't imagine that, but but a different way of looking at it, different words or something. What did you hear about which you are invited to pray? By yourself, not just by me. And then, after a little bit, I will quiet you down, and then you go off. We'll come back here at 10:30. But as Bruce said, stay in silence if you can, but not now. So go at it, help each other here, and then I'll tell you when it's time to pray.